Hi, and welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, episode 32. I'm Janice Cumming.
And I'm David Landrulli. And today, Janice, we are joined by a guest, our good friend, Tahsin Alam from Rutgers University. Tahsin is the Associate Vice President for Talent Management and Organizational Development at the Rutgers University Foundation. Welcome, Tahsin.
Thank you for having me, Janice. This is going to be a great conversation, I'm sure, David. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, just want to share with the audience that you and I met, it's got to be going on about 4 years ago, as best I can recall, in the spring at one of the CASE talent management conferences. And we've struck up a, you know, collegial relationship, a friendship. And I just wanted to let you know how much I appreciate that.
Of course. I think it was Marina Del Rey, and it was my first CASE talent management conference. I think it was your second or so, and
yes.
Glad we ran into each other.
Yes, absolutely.
We're going to unpack the great blog post that you wrote for us, Tahsin, about strategic organizational development for larger advancement teams, which is something we specifically asked you to write about because we know you have a lot of experience and expertise in this issue.
So yeah.
For sharing that with our community.
Yeah. And for the community, guys, just go to the website and click on the blog, and you can see, you know, Tahsin's article there where he shares some of these best practices we're going to talk about, not only from the perspective of what you're doing at Rutgers, Tahsin, but also, you know, you do some, from time to time, I'm aware that some other large advancement teams have sought you out to consult with them on this topic of organizational design. So we'd love to hear from you. Like, you suggested like three things in the article that folks could do, even if they have a smaller, medium-sized advancement team as well.
It's true. And, you know, what's interesting about the moments in time for a development shop when I'm asked to come in and do this, especially not just at Rutgers, but also at these other institutions, is I wanted to go into it a little bit in the article, but in the interest of space, I didn't. The opportune times to do that exercise, the three steps and then some, tends to be A, when there's a new vice president on board and he or she is trying to wrap their arms around the entire organization. Yet, you know, there's so many verticals and so many nuances that one person to do it all isn't enough. It could still be a long-term vice president, but you're about to prep to go into a campaign. And as you know, at least in the higher education world, you can only go into a campaign if you're only doubling what you did last time. and in order to, that seems to be the going rate nowadays. But if you're going to do that, there is a proportionality that you have to create between the organizational structure and how much you intend to raise. You know, these institutions are very used to doing a feasibility study, as we classically know, which is look at the data, do we have the donor potential? And then maybe sometimes on the fringes, they'll do a, well, do you have the right number of staff to how much money you have to raise ratio? But as I said in the article, that's only the tip of the iceberg. How you actually get into the nuances of doing that and fleshing out these teams to leave it in the hands of your directors or your associate vice presidents is, you know, equal parts not the wisest move, and sometimes maybe even unfair to those managers.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Janice and I interact with a number of chief development officers at various size institutions. And, you know, there's always this talk about, oh, well, we're in the quiet phase, we're in the strategic planning phases of the campaign. But you never hear them talk about like organizational structure and design. So, I mean, I've never hear that. You're like the only guy I ever hear that from. And you're not the chief development officer. So thank God Rutgers has.
It's fascinating because I think what's interesting, as I do allude to in the article, is why is it that the rest of the world, ostensibly the rest of the world, especially for-profit major companies, will invest in this area as a baseline efficiency standard to business operations, except we won't. So, you know, for the, whether you call it disruptive or whether you call it just trying to catch up with the rest of the world, it's about time we really looked at this as a business critical function.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm glad you're raising this awareness. And, you know, I'm glad that you also, you know, contributing to CASE and some other places, I'm sure, including the fundraising leadership community, just to raise this awareness. Like, you have to think about, if you're going into a campaign, as part of the campaign readiness, you have to think about your talent. You mentioned that at the very top of the article. You know, in years gone by, you know, larger organizations would add frontline fundraisers for campaigns and then let them go, you know, even though they were just moving into the quiet phase of the next campaign. It seems so ridiculous. Correct. And you make this case for retention and then structure. So why don't you share a little bit about how someone might go about this? You kind of gave them three steps in the article.
I would mention a pre-step to the three steps, which is, if you're a chief development officer, chief advancement officer, what have you, have a really honest conversation with your department heads or your division heads and get them to confess whether or not they have the A, bandwidth, and B, the ability to critically examine their teams. Again, as I allude to in the article, this is an easier conversation if you have a new hire or you're a new manager, because there is a certain expectation of you will either restructure or reevaluate how the department is working. But what if you come in as the chief advancement officer of a medium-sized shop and your head of major gifts, who is very good and you don't want to lose, is doing a great job, but has never really critically evaluated their team? And the most important question being, have you not critically evaluated your team and its efficiencies because you didn't have time? Or is it because it's a faculty you just don't have, which is perfectly fine too, but let's get you the help to get it done instead of presuming that it's going to get done.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, you again make the point in the article, this is where a consultant can be very helpful. Chief development officer, associate vice president on larger teams may not have the bandwidth to do the research and the analysis that a consultant coming in can help with. I think that's wise advice. And I'm sure the question that you encourage clients to ask, like in the case of that major gift officer, is, okay, your team performed well in the previous campaign. Now, with the doubling, you know, what does that team need to look like for this phase, right?
Yeah, and I think, go ahead, Jenna. The article is, you know, these are very practical, tangible steps, you know, that people can take. And, you know, I love that you started with, like, talking to your people. You know, we were kind of joking before we started recording, like, it sounds obvious, but yet maybe you can speak to seem to a little bit like why you feel that's so important, because it's really not always happening.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is, from having done this for Rutgers and a few other institutions, is it truly is the furthest thing from rocket science. Many of your best people generally tend to have the answer. And now, why those answers haven't come into play is a cultural question, which is your frontline people or your foot soldiers may not feel empowered enough to bring it up, or there isn't an ability to make that change, or, you know, the more practical, that there are budgetary limitations. But my point being that if you're a new leader or a leader who needs to reconfigure the direction that the team is going in, ask your team members. If you have throughput in your group, if you have people who have an average tenure in our industry, about 4 to 5 years, there's a wealth of information in their mind. It's tantamount to asking the question, what would you do if you were king for a day? There some people who are in the trenches will have efficiency suggestions, which they, A, may not have had the facility to share, or it's actually up to you to get them to bring it out of them, because they may not be able to articulate it correctly. But if you take the time and ask your team members, you'll get a heck of a lot out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I really do. Could you share perhaps one example, maybe just at Rutgers, where you know there was a structural change based on kind of the steps that you took, or even just one of the steps from the article that where you asked mm-hmm. when you came into Rutgers, and you know you came in from the outside, and you mm-hmm. did this process, and you asked people, and then suggestions were made, and you actually implemented one of those suggestions and changed the structure for in terms of being more efficient and better communications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, for the interest of showing that this is an exercise that can be done in more than just fundraising areas, I'm going to use the example of the IT help desk team at the Rutgers University Foundation. So for the longest time, they were a scrappy team that could do a lot of things because we were a smaller organization at the time, about 150 employees, and now we've grown to about 270, 280. And the truth of the matter was that the growth of that support team for all of our technological needs did not grow at the same pace. Mm. Now, what sometimes can tend to happen is, oh, we haven't grown quickly. We have two options. We either need to staff up incredibly, or we need to outsource it. That tends to be the shoot from the hip solution to growing out a team, especially a central services team like the IT help desk. So that's when I went in and I did a complete analysis of the team as we were bringing on a director of that team. And it was a small team at the time. It was really just, you know, 2.5 people from one person half time, 2 people and this director who was coming in. Mm. And the going rate at the time was, the belief at the time was, we are going to, because the ideal ratio to number of users to a help desk person is 1 to 40. And at mm-hmm. the time we were sort of 1 to 90, if you may. We need to either outsource or hire additional bodies. Mm-hmm. Well, when I went and talked to each of those members, one of the members, who actually was one of the younger members of the team with maybe about 4 years of experience on her belt, suggested, you know what, instead of doing that, why don't we just hire one more person, but upgrade our software system to a ticketing system that the entire industry uses, but is specialized for a medium-sized organization like 250, 300. Well, you know, when she said that, it all sounded like gobbledygook to me because I'm not a tech or IT at all. But what it translated to was a very smart mind saying, yeah, you could hire 4 more people to do this, or you could hire 2 more people to support the customer service side of things, but create a ticketing system. And the crux of getting that right is how you socialize the ticketing system. Because right now we have a ticketing system. At that moment, we had a ticketing system, but nobody knew how to use it. Yeah. In the case of this team, it was a familiarization and socialization issue rather than a FDE issue. So, you know, often people think that people of my mindset that, oh, you need to go in, talk to your team, figure out where your resources need to be, tend to be preemptively add additional resources minded. But frankly, I'm not. I'm more of a efficiency. Do we have fat somewhere that we can cut? And can we get more efficient in other areas rather than adding, you know, successive amounts of additional resources? I hope that example sort of shows you how, if you did dig in and talk to your team, they might give you the answers that you need.
Yeah. Well, what I love about that example is that folks who are on the front lines, they really do have good ideas. And mm-hmm. when you ask them, you also mentioned this in the article, that there has to be some level of trust. And clearly there was. I mean, sometimes mm-hmm. with a new director coming in, folks will may be reluctant to even make a suggestion. But if you have a culture of mm-hmm. trust and communication. I mean, that we could spend a whole podcast just talking about, you know, building trust so that folks are willing to make that kind of suggestion. So I love that that you guys have that culture. I'm sure it's a, you know, you and I have talked about that. It's a you know, in mm-hmm. terms of creating a culture where people can be candid, like that person you mentioned, mm-hmm. And Janice and I mm-hmm. do support mm-hmm. around that. So I love that you shared that example. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think
that's a very salient point, what you just made, David, which is, I also don't want to overstate what the parameters of what I'm preaching here is, which is come in, help on a structural level, identify the efficiencies, but then looking to this, either this process or someone like me to help a manager be a better manager or a better leader. That's not me. That's you and Janice, which is that's your expertise, and you do that a million times better than I would. But I get the structure right, and then remembering to provide them with the mentorship that they need is also important.
That's very good. What did you have, Janice?
Yeah, I was actually just struck by, you know, it's sort of funny. It's like fundraising. Like, people don't give until we ask, and people don't sometimes give their ideas until we actually create the space. You know, it's really, I think that's what the beauty of, you know, steps you're laying out is, how do we actually create the space and the curiosity so that people on the team feel like they really can step into it? And, you know, the sort of idea of, like, you know, it's a time to dream big. It's not, and then you say, you know, dream big and then come back to reality. Like, not everything might happen, but if you create the space where people can actually have those kind of blue sky visions, then you'll get a lot of data, and then you can decide, you know, what you're actually able to implement from that.
Hmm. It reminds me of one of those projects that I was doing with another university. I was working with the head of all unit-based fundraising. So that's a large university, and this person oversaw the chief development officers for 8 different schools. So we were trying to drill down to, okay, if we want to get to X amount of dollars raised 4 years out from today, then let's dream. That's step 2, which is dream and figure out where we're going and see what we would need. But as soon as I was done with that step, she was ready to turn around and say, okay, so it sounds like we need 22 more fundraisers. Mm-hmm. No, that last step can't be possibly be more important, which is, you know, steps 1 and 2, the results that you get from step 1 and 2 is a all other things being equal moment. But unfortunately, that's not reality. All other things are not equal, and you don't have you know, unending resources. As my theater professor in college used to tell me, if you're going to build a set and I gave you a limitless budget to have all the lights and the set design that you would want, you'd never get anything done. So the working within those limitations is important. So step 3, I would argue, is the most critical part, which is, how do you rewind those 4 years and get to year 1 and say, you know what, my budget for this year is set. Therefore, I can only bring in 2 additional positions, and this is very important, I'm going to have to reimagine an existing position because I simply don't need it anymore. Mm. So in higher education, we have this, I feel, and this is strictly my opinion, we have this habit of not wanting to shake the rafters too much because we've always had this position. Well, you know, one of the ways in which I operate is, if I ever find myself saying to myself, oh, this is how we've always done it, and this is how we will proceed, it's time for me to get another job, because that's just the wrong way of looking at a structure. So yeah, it's very important to dial that reality back.
Well, you know, I love the way you frame this in our conversation here and in the article. Like, there is this kind of 2-step process: dream big and then, okay, what's reality year 1, year 2, year 3? Because I think when you put those 2 things together, a lot of creativity flows. Like, even just that simple step of asking someone, like, in the IT department, you know, her answer wasn't like, oh, we're going to, you know, need 5 more bodies to, if we just look at the mm-hmm. ratio. She had a whole different, like, she was probably dreaming about having that ticketing system. I mean, that's what IT people mm-hmm. dream about. You
that's
know,
correct.
That
absolutely
was a good
true.
Dream. Mm-hmm. That was a good dream.
mm-hmm. you know, yeah.
So we want to bring it around today, and we want to invite the audience to, you know, in our podcast, to see, we always like to invite the audience to try something, to put something into practice. So if you could give them one thing, like to do next week, what would it be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my suggestion would be, before you jump into this because you think it's a good idea, I would take a litmus test attitude towards it. So the litmus test would be as follows. If you have a team of anywhere between 3 and 15, I'm picking a somewhat arbitrary number, ask yourself the question, and you as the leader, the question, do I feel like every member of that team is fully utilized? Are they doing 100% of what they could be doing at work, while of course maintaining a work-life balance, which as we all know is very, very important to mental health and operating at your best? If you can unequivocally say that the answer to that question is yes, well, then maybe this exercise isn't something you necessarily need to do right now until your CEO or your president says, we're upping our stakes completely, where we're going to double our fundraising numbers, we're going to double our alumni engagement acquisition numbers, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But if at the litmus test, or even instinctually, you can say, you know what, A, B, and C, I know they could be doing more either because they're underutilized or they're incredibly intelligent and they've grown beyond their job. Well, you know what? It's time for you to start step one, step two, and step three. That's what I would say. So take a litmus test to decide whether you need to do this exercise in the first place. And if you do, then there you have it. Or give me a call and I'd be happy to help you help guide you through it. But don't presume that your team needs to be shaken up. If everything is going well, check, do the litmus test.
Great. Well, I think that's a great thing for the audience to try, you know, do the litmus test that you've suggested. And let's see, folks can get in touch with you at the Rutgers University Foundation. They can find you there, Tassin, on the website. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right on the website. If you go to Rutgers University Foundation and look at Contact Us, there's my name will be right there.
All right.
Yeah. And I suspect a lot of people are not going to answer 100% for every person on their team. I suspect a lot of people right now, their heads are sort of like, ooh, yeah, that's a powerful question.
That's going to take a while. That litmus test question is a thought-provoking process. So we encourage the audience to go put that into practice. Yeah. And we will see you soon, Tassin. Thank you.
Thanks for the great conversation.
Janice, David, thank you so much for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
All right.
Take care.